food is the basis of good health, then trust is the basis of any good health service. Well, that's the guiding principle of an emergency food relief program at the Southern Queensland Centre of Excellence for Indigenous Health at Inala, south of Brisbane. Every Wednesday, a small team from the centre take time out of their routines to collect, package and deliver up to 25 healthy hampers to families in need. These hampers are made from food given to them by Second Bite, a food rescue program that collects unused food from stores across Brisbane. Leanne Pacino, who's a women's sexual health worker at the centre, starts each Wednesday by driving out to Wakerley, just east of Brisbane, to collect the food from Second Bite. Now, she says that the program means so much more than simply providing food.
It's not just about giving food. Often you go there, you might see one of the clients, and when you're yarning to them, you're like, oh, maybe you should come see a doctor. You're able to do proactive things for them while you're delivering the food. So it's a lot more than just going, oh, here goes some food for you. And sometimes, it's about going there a few times and just trying to build that trust.
Those ideas of trust building and emergency food relief are forms of social capital creation. And on this podcast, we're going behind the scenes of the Food Relief Program, which is one capacity-building initiative at the Centre of Excellence. We'll hear from the program staff and learn how they use it as a vehicle for generating social capital to improve the health outcomes of Inala's Indigenous community. The Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development defines social capital as the links, shared values and understandings in society that enable individuals and groups to trust each other and work together. This is underpinned by political scientist Robert Putnam's understanding that social capital comprises moral obligations, norms, social values and social networks. Social capital creation is therefore seen in the program's focus on building trust and rapport with clients to get them more comfortable with asking for help. Leanne Pacino.
I think the real key is having that trust within the service and the trust within the workers. And I think the key is getting out of community. You can't be sitting at your desk because they won't know who you are or trust you.
Centre of Excellence dietitian Annalie Houston initiated the program more than 9 years ago in recognition of the role that nutrition plays in curbing chronic diseases.
So I guess from hearing from Aboriginal people and their stories over the years about me suggesting healthy food. However, healthy food is not always accessible to everyone, which meant that my recommendations for eating well may not have been easy for people to afford.
Without this service, Annalie says the risk of losing people's engagement in healthcare is pretty high.
Yeah, I guess you might lose somebody's engagement into the health service because health isn't always at the top of the priority list for someone. They might have many other complex issues going on for them, whether it's housing or family stress. And if we can't provide any stress relief, then it's really, you might not have that communication with that client. And they'll just go without, actually.
What she says here closely corresponds to Dr. Jenny Hu's understanding of agency in strategic communications. Here's what some of Dr. Hu said in her presentation to students of the University of Queensland.
Agency manifests itself in the practices, either to maintain the status quo or challenge existing institutions.
Annalie Houston therefore exercised a dialectic understanding of agency by challenging the institutional expectation that Indigenous people should be able to afford to act on the recommendations of dietitians. She was able to take creative agency by initiating a partnership with Second Bite, overcoming any financial constraints of the Centre of Excellence. Now, situational theory depicts that public behaviour changes easily, and that change depends on the situation and opportunity to discuss it with others. That summation courtesy of Ratchet Criantono, writing for the International Journal of Business and Social Science in 2012. The theory helps explain how the program approaches food insecurity and the wider issue of trust building in the Inala community between Indigenous people and mainstream healthcare. So what is the situation that we're dealing with the food emergency program? Well, the situation is this. Indigenous people are between 5 and 7 times more likely to experience food insecurity than non-Indigenous people. This trend is tied to the prevalence of chronic disease among Indigenous communities and is triggered by the seclusion, disadvantage and racism perpetuated by westernised governments and social systems linked to the colonial era. Using PR researcher Ronald Smith's categories of the publics, the key groups of the people who share interests in the food program are the Centre of Excellence staff, who are the enabler publics that make it happen. We have the Centre's clients or patients. We have the food rescue organisation Second Bite, which is a producer or supplier of the program. And then there's the limiters, such as members of the public who lack cultural awareness and misappropriate stereotypes to Indigenous people, as Annalie points out.
We've given food to a client who's walked over into Woolies and they've been approached by the security guard accusing her of stealing that food. And I've had to go over to Woolworths and say that I've given her that food. And the client was obviously traumatised from that, having the police come and the security guard there. So that's just one example.
Indigenous woman Leslie Ann Clements, a social worker at the centre who helps coordinate the program, draws upon the recent past of trauma that places a lot of stigma around Indigenous people seeking help.
They don't want to ask and they don't want to be put on the spot to think that, you know, they're not able to provide. They don't want to ask because they have come from the mission where, you know, they were able to, I suppose, have a bit more support than what they do down here because they're so much more isolated. So, you know, I think it's a shame they have to come to an organisation that's white driven or systematically driven than an Indigenous service.
Further complicating the situation is the history of racism that was embedded in all kinds of social services. Inala has Brisbane's second largest Indigenous population, which is also one of the largest urban Indigenous communities in Australia. Yet in 1995, the Indigenous Community Health Centre only had 12 Indigenous people in their books, which was a red flag for the Centre of Excellence Clinical Director Dr. Noel Heyman, who was practising at the Inala Community Health Centre back then.
Well, when I started to move out to the Inala Community Health Centre, we identified only 12 Aboriginal people that attended the general practice unit. So to me, you know, there's a high population of Aboriginal people here at Inala and they should have been getting way more than that. So when I looked into it, there's still a lot of racism in our system. So I wanted to make sure that Aboriginal people, you know, accessed primary care.
So he then went about creating a dedicated Indigenous health service within that centre, which then took on a new life on a block of land across the road, which is now the Centre of Excellence.
So from that 12 back in 1995, we have over 10,000 on our books now.
This turnaround speaks to the culturally safer model used by the centre. There's traditional artwork on the walls, staff of Indigenous heritage who can relate to the lived experience of their clients, and there's health programs designed by or in close consultation with Indigenous people for Indigenous people. What this all means is the centre is dealing with a vulnerable ethnic minority who have been persecuted on the base of race and might not have adequate knowledge to understand the health issues they're facing. As Leslie Ann Clements pointed out, under situational theory, the type of person coming out of the vulnerable ethnic minorities falls into a latent public group who cannot identify or describe the problem. But I take this one step further by arguing that the public is latent because they are fearful of the past relationships to healthcare. And this is something that dietitian Annalie Houston sees a lot of in her work.
Like, for example, a lady, I was in a consult with her and, like, she had diabetes, she had all these health complications. And then, so we gave her a hamper the following week. She came to me a few days later. I saw her in the waiting room and I said, oh, what did you think of the hamper? And she said, oh, I got that and I was tearing up. I was crying because actually all I had in my house was one egg and one piece of bread. So she didn't tell me that. It was sort of like exploring what, you know, what was going on. I offered it to her, and then after I'd given her the hamper, it was then that she said how much she needed it.
So that's the power of the program we're dealing with here. It's following what Robert Putnam proposes as the two main forms of social capital building. We have the bonding and the bridging aspects. In fact, it uses both. Bonding is seen in how people are linked together based on a common identity. Here we have a food service tailored to suit the cultural needs of Indigenous people. And then we see the bridging form of social capital through the interaction staff have with their clients, leading to other conversations about their health, nudging them in the direction of getting medical checkups and treatment. As Indigenous local and Centre of Excellence men's health worker Ian Tyson says,
we don't just go to a client's house and just say, oh, do you want some food? They let us know.
Sorry.
They let the social worker know, the health workers know. They'll let GPs know. GPs will let the community team know, and dietitians and whatnot, then other issues come into play.
In this way, the program staff take on the role of Ronald Smith's idea of intercessory publics in their capacity to act as a bridge or an influential go-between between their clients and other staff at the centre who can provide them with other medical services. So this food relief program is part of the fabric that makes the Centre of Excellence a good example of culturally appropriate healthcare. It falls into a wider network of community outreach programs the centre uses to build the social capital needed to get more people accessing its services. It creatively works within the institutional constraints of the centre to produce a powerful network of trusting relationships between staff and their patients.